to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, you meet Tim Wright, who describes himself as a digital author and producer. I accompany him on one of his Blake walks, beginning close to Waterloo Station in London. The route we take has changed dramatically since the time William Blake first came to live in the area. The ambient noise created as much by the railway infrastructure as by the traffic does impair the recording, but Tim's enthusiasm and intriguing take on walking shines through.
I'm very interested in moving from a digital world as a digital writer to then being able to produce print products out of digital assets that people can take around with them. That might be books, but more likely booklets. And similarly, that you could take booklets and printed material, make notes and your drawings as you walk around, and then put those back on the internet in scanned form.
Just tell us quickly what you've got. It's on your wrist.
It's a GPS system. I bought it at Decathlon for 50 quid.
Brilliant.
And it's a satellite tracking thing. Immediately I get home, I can stick it into my notebook and it creates a KML file that I can put on Google Maps straight away. But it also does your altitude, crucially for me, your velocity at any point. So I can know how long it's taking me to get from point to point, which is actually quite useful if you're thinking, if I want to write an audio piece that fits the map, I need to know how to write to length for each bit of the walk. And so each time I do this walk, I do it, and then I take the average. I know I'm going to write an audio piece that's roughly the right length.
You're about to take me on a walk on a route that you've devised.
Yes.
Where are we at the moment and where are we going?
Right, well, we met at Waterloo East, and I usually start at Alaska Street. We're going to walk down towards the cut, and then we're going to take a right and go down Lower Marsh, and go straight across Lower Marsh, heading for Centaur Street and Hercules Road, which is a place where William Blake lived for a number of years. His house isn't there, but there is a plaque. And then we're going to sort of walk down past the Imperial War Museum and down Kennington Road a bit, and then back up, cut up to Lambeth Bridge, Lambeth Palace. And then we're going to walk just along the riverbank all the way back to the National Theatre and come back here.
So what's your fascination about William Blake?
It was a fascination that was handed to me, in a way, by a guy called Chris Mead, who runs an institution called the Institution of the Future of the Book. And he had a commission to get a number of people to write digital works inspired by William Blake in some way, and he invited me to come to the inaugural meeting of people who might want to do that. So I didn't even know I wanted to do that. But by the time we'd finished that meeting, I was really interested in William Blake. I ended up doing two projects, and this is one of them, with the Blake walking, and it was I was talking to the actor Toby Jones, who was there, and he said he was always interested in William Blake as a person who had visions and absolutely believed that he could go and have a pint of beer with the prophet Isaiah and could see angels in trees, and that his dead brother would dictate, you know, poems to him. And he said, nobody does that anymore unless they think you're a nutter. But wouldn't it be great if you could use digital technologies to be able to walk around and have some kind of vision? And I said to him, I think I can do that for you. Yeah, I can get you to walk around with a mobile device and get loads of people remotely to send you pictures and comments about what you're doing, and they'll know exactly where you are. I arbitrarily then came up with three walks. One that spells out an L as you walk it, one that spells out an O, and one that spells out an S. And Los, or Loose, is one of Blake's mythic figures. So this is the L we're walking. And each time I do these walks now, it's not with Toby necessarily, with anybody who wants to come and do it. And we simply record things we see on devices and bring maybe media with us. Maybe that's booklets that we've created, or pictures, or poems that we'd like to read out. And we record the discussions and the thoughts that we have, and I tend to then put them back onto a map in the shape of the L or the O or the S. And you usually find that there is suddenly a topic of discussion or a theme or a thought that comes out of the walk and the talking that wouldn't have occurred to you if you hadn't gone through that process. And hopefully over time, I'm now thinking I will start to make a piece of drama or poetry that originates out of all this walking with digital tools.
how many of these walks have you devised? You've devised one for each L, O and S?
Yeah, so the L starts at Waterloo. They all start at railway stations, which is convenient.
And do they all have some linkage to Blake? I mean, you either go past somewhere where he lived or where he was... Because he's buried in Bun Hill Road.
I'm not trying to do some kind of cultural walk where you go to the places he lived. It's sort of that we skirt around all the areas that he lived. And that we also just take inspiration from London, not necessarily from Blake. I mean, but this one, he lived in this area, and we'll go past his house, actually. And on the O, there's the cemeteries near him. And then the S is actually London Bridge and Tower Bridge through the city. There's no major connection. But one of the things about Blake, when you read about his biography, he was an inveterate walker and did sort of stride out quite a lot. He'd walk from Lambeth to Hampstead and back regularly and did go wandering around the city. And that he would recite his visions and songs as he went. And the nice thing about these new technologies and what we're doing now is that we capture just ad hoc conversation and our following of a route, and out of it we make something. But the point is that we start off not knowing what we're doing. So as cultural practitioners, we're not too polished or professional about what we're doing. And we don't know whether it has any point to it either.
We're kind of opportunists. So if something comes in and... you know, bumps into us and sparks off an idea, then that's great, isn't it? I mean, you know, that's...
Exactly.
And the great thing about this city, I don't know whether it's the same in other cities, is there's plenty of opportunity for spontaneity or seeing quirky things that you hadn't noticed the first or second time that you walked that route.
But now I've done this route several times. I love doing it because of that. You just... the concentration. If you say you set out that you are going to sort of capture sounds and photographs and record the conversations, it's exhausting as well.
Yeah.
But your relationship with the space changes dramatically. But it's key, that thing about not knowing what you're doing, because I think one of the things I like about Blake as well is that I don't think he ever really cares about whether you understand what he's on about. He seems to always be moving on. He makes something and moves on. And the relationship between the images and the text is not necessarily clear. But he's very pure about, you know, he's received a vision and he writes it down. It's not up to him to then decide what it means. It's the thing that he was given and then he's just recorded it. So it's very immediate and sort of rather slightly meaningless as well as sort of meaningful, because he's obviously brought his intelligence to it. And I find that whole idea really refreshing. Because I think we've lost a bit of that everybody has to beat the meaning out of everything they do before they even do it.
You mentioned something else to me, Kidmap, was it you said?
Yes.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. Well, that's something I did last year. I read Robert Louis Stevenson Kidnap when I had a cold in bed, you know, and thought, I've never read that, I'll have a look at that. I thought it was such a fantastic book. And there's a really weird moment in it. You've been engaged in this adventure of a young boy being sort of chased across Scotland by the British Army and hanging out with a Long John Silver type rebel. And right at the end, he gets back to Edinburgh and his family lawyer, who's restoring his family fortune to him, says, "Ah, where have you been? Today's the 24th of August, and it was recorded that the ship that you were on was shipwrecked on the 26th of June. So what have you been doing all this time?" And I thought, that is such a weird thing for a writer to do the whole adventure and then at the end mention the dates. Why would you do that? And is he trying to suggest that if I go to the end of Mull where the shipwreck was on the 26th of June and I follow this narrative that, you know, night falls and then it's the 27th of June and then it's the 28th, and can I take this book and just follow the instructions in it and end up in Edinburgh on the 24th of August? Does this work? So that's what I did. I went up there and I took with me two mobile phones and a flip camera and a notebook. I blogged my way from the end of Mull to Edinburgh using the book, A Bit of Literature, as my guide. And a lot of really amazing things happened. One was that in order to post videos every day of where I was and what I was doing, including reading out the book, the episode of the book, I had to get wireless access from local people. So I started just meeting lots of local people who all loved the book and wanted to know what I was doing and maybe join me, in fact, in walking the various legs of it. Second, that people online, I started getting dozens and then hundreds of people who were logging in to just listen to the podcast every night about, like, a book at bedtime, of the reading out of this book in the place by that funny man who's walking it, including quite a lot of children listening to it. But by geolocating it, I actually got thousands of hits on the Google map that I was doing every day of where I'd been and where I was going in posting all the photographs and stuff. So I realised there was a real sort of appetite for consuming a book, reading it or listening to it or engaging with its content through this sort of digital lens, that there was a lot of people who were quite interested in that. So since then I've thought, well, can you do this with other books? Can you take other books out for a walk into the wilds with a load of mobile technologies, and everybody can keep in touch with what you're doing and sort of be part of a itinerant digital book club?
Now we've stopped here,
and
this is very worrying because it says Project Blake. So tell me,
clever.
How did it happen?
No, I came across, honestly,
a sound installation.
Yes.
Yeah.
I came across this by accident. I didn't want there to be a mean. I wrote the L out on a London map without any reference to knowing what was there. But then when I came down here, I realised that here was a whole load of Blake murals and sound installations leading to the place where he lived. So that was fortuitous. It wasn't planned.
So many of these mosaics are just reinterpretations of Blake's original...
Yeah.
Fantastic.
This is from the Book of Urizen, which I'm particularly interested in. I think this is a representation of air, of one of the elements, his mythical figure of the elements. So he wrote Book of Urizen while he lived here, as he prodded around here. And so that's the text I'm quite interested in thinking about. He called it the first Book of Urizen. Then he rubbed out the word first a few years later, like he wasn't going to get around to the second one. I'd be quite interested in doing is using this walking around to make the second Book of Urizen.
Yeah.
It'd be quite an interesting idea.
Is what you do... psychogeography.
I hate that word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, tell us. Okay.
Yeah. It is. I think I was inspired by it and read about it. I'm more interested in situationist international ideas of disrupting, you know, urban environments to have all my experiences manufactured for me. I'm interested in that, the sort of cultural disruption that allows me to be free. But the psychogeography bit has been a bit confused with that. Psychogeography just seems to be about mooching around with a map.
Let's get back to you and walking. I'm not suggesting that all your digital work is based around walking, but there's a good chunk of it. I mean, do you find the actual process of walking gets you thinking, you know, or did you sort of go out of your way and think, no, I definitely want to include something that has to be to do with walking?
It's slightly a function of my age and my work is, you know, I spent years sitting in a room alone, staring at a screen with my hand firmly attached to a mouse, and it's very bad for my back, my posture, and my health generally. And I also found that writing, it still is for many people a solitary practice that you do in a darkened room. I've got increasingly fed up of that, and found through the Kidnap Project that going out and walking, that I could still continue to be a writer, but that I was now social and I was free from being locked in a space, and that I could work out, my dream now is to be able to just make stuff as I move, that just through the physical gesture of walking I will write to the internet and I won't be hampered by the ideas of having to go back to my study and make sense of what I did. It'll just flow as I walk. That's the dream.
No disrespect to your ability to write on the hoof.
Yeah.
I do fear there might be an awful lot of drivel being generated by loads and loads of people. We may never quite actually find the nugget.
Just need good search tools for that, and curators like yourself, don't we?
Okay, now where are we going from
here?
We're
going to cut through the estate and just get through to there. Actually, I would normally cut back down to Kennington Road in order to go past the Imperial War Museum. And of course, that in Blake's day, that was Bedlam, the madhouse. So I think it's rather a funny idea that Blake the Nutter walked past it on the outside while all the loonies were going, oi, oi, you're meant to be on the inside.
Do you have any idea what this bit of London would have been like in Blake's time.
Yes, I think one of the things that makes it quite inspiring is the fact that he moved into Lambeth at the point when it was still very rural, and by the time he left, it was becoming incredibly urban. So he was seeing that encroachment happen for his eyes, and he obviously wasn't very happy about it. And the other part about this was that obviously Lambeth Palace, the Archbishop of Canterbury, this is his domain. As a free thinker religiously, it was quite an interesting place for Blake to end up, on Back Street, somewhere between Bedlam and Lambeth Palace. And huge market gardens here, and yet suddenly factories. It's not very surprising to me as a man who, A, is working with acids and stuff burnt into copper and is doing quite sort of smoky, messy work, that he's then seeing the gardens being turned into factories. His imagery in things like the Book of Urizen are all about sort of smoke and what seem to be hellish images running up against rather sort of Renaissance figures of sort of beautiful woodland nymphs and stuff like that. So it's all happening for him in this area. When I did this with Toby, he walked and I spied on him. I knew where he was because he was geolocating himself. And then I could take shortcuts and be there ahead of him and then film him without him knowing and spy on him as he walked around. So I've got this footage of watching somebody wandering around inspecting things, like he was Blake, I suppose. If you were somebody who spied on somebody who was busy recording and sketching and shouting and singing. And I love this space, this is the Lambeth Walk Doorstep Green, great name. I can see this being another fantastic theatrical space, but this is an obvious amphitheatre to allow, you know, an incident to take place as part of your walk. One of the reasons I wanted to come out again today is to really get a sense of when you'd be walking and when you might stop and something might kick off and what the times in between would be. As I keep walking, I find more and more and think, no, this is really going to work. You could really do this. That you could have it timed so that you've got audio tracks. There are actors wandering around this space, and then if you get to that point, the right point, then you bear witness to other parts of the story as it emerges.
Do you feel, though, that if you were wearing headphones, you'd rather take yourself away from what's going on around you?
It depends how you write the audio piece. I went to the Battersea Arts Centre not very long ago, and there was a fantastic piece there where you just were sitting on the step with an iPod listening to somebody narrate something, and then it says, quick, follow that girl. And she walks off and you watch her take the phone call, and you go all the way round the back of the theatre and then into a cafe and steal something off her desk when she goes to the loo, and then you come back. So you have no interaction with the actor whatsoever, but you're listening to the instructions of a narrator in here. But you still hear everything around you, and in fact you're made more alert, because you think, I've got to hear that as well as listen to this, because otherwise I won't understand what the hell is going on here.
Okay, so where does it end?
You see, it's a very good question, because if you think about every walk has an end, but where does it end? For me, I realised when I was doing the kidnaps thing, that finishes on the 24th of August. And then the Riddle of the Sands starts on the 26th of September. And then I found another walk down in Dorset relating to Thomas Hardy that follows that little gap about when he wrote some poems when his wife died. So the idea might be that if I get enough walks together,
we could have a year, a calendar year.
A calendar year. It never ends.
Wonderful.
You just go round and round and round again. And your idea, as you just discussed, is that if we intersect between the Blake Walk and the Dickens Walk, we might have started on a Blake Walk and got diverted onto a Dickens Walk that led to a Wordsworth Walk. You know, who knows where you end up?
Are there any really favourite walks that you have, or routes that you'd like to recommend to listeners?
Yes, I was talking to you, I was taken by a friend of mine who was researching novels he's writing about things happening along the Thames out by the Medway. And at low tide in the 19th century, you know, thousands of sailors would gather there on the sands just waiting to get on board a ship. You go there now, there's absolutely nobody there. It's a fantastically desolate an atmospheric place to walk along the Thames as you leave Britain out that way, and you have a sense that there used to be thousands of people here and now there's no. What happened? It's like some terrible plague happened. So the south side's a great walk up to the Isle of Sheppey, and then the north side We ended up at Tilbury Fort, and it's a staggering view over the Thames. So I know that someone like Ian Sinclair has done this kind of stuff to death about reading about it, but you really ought to go, because it is an amazing part of the world, and it also makes you think differently about London. You realise, God, London is a port, and we've forgotten that. And we've forgotten about how the river is sucking in the world and spitting us out into the world. You stand on the edge of that, on the edge of the North Sea or the Channel, and that sense that out there, it's Conrad, isn't it? Heart of Darkness. It is the snaking of the Thames River out and then out to the Heart of Darkness and out into the world. It must have been that feeling. And if you go out there, you just get a sniff of it, of that feeling that generations of English people must have felt. Fantastic feeling.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Tim Wright. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.